This podcast is supported by 23andMe.co.uk, a personalised genetic service available in the UK. The 23andMe genetic analysis is based on a small saliva sample. People in the UK can learn about their genetic information that published studies associate with conditions like blood clotting, cystic fibrosis, and even response to certain medicines. More information is available at 23andme.co.uk.
The best way to kick off your weekend is with us, right here, right now, on Thursday Night Tailgate, with your hosts, Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzeri. Tonight, the fellas once again outdid themselves with a great guest list. First, Pittsburgh sports talk radio and TV host Paul Alexander is back with us. Former Colts and Seahawks defensive back Nesby Glasgow is making a return visit. Our first ever guest on TNT, former Steelers linebacker LeVon Kirkland will be here. Former Saints, Rams, and Chiefs All-Pro guard Kyle Turley is back on TNT. Our good friend and former Dolphins guard John Bock returns. And in our 12th man segment, Sports One Marketing CEO David Meltzer will be joined by former boxing heavyweight champion Hasim Rahman. Looking forward to hearing all about the new and exciting events with Sports One Marketing. So as always, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show with a couple of good buddies of mine, Chris and Bob. Guys, as always, have a great time. Take it away.
The best way to kick off the weekend and the best way to kick off a show. Thank you, Joe Lajanusa. Good evening, everybody, and thank you for joining us again tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate. I'm your host, Chris Mascaro, and tonight Bob and I have another great lineup to share with you, like Joe just mentioned. A couple great offensive linemen, some great friends returning to the show. Former heavyweight champion of the world is going to be here in our 12th man segment with David Meltzer. So what a show we've got lined up for you tonight, like we always say. Relax, settle in. Let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for the next couple of hours. TNT is brought to you by former Bengals and Falcons tight end Reggie Kelly and the great folks over at Kyven Foods. Be sure to spice up everything on your menu by adding Kyven's salsa, sauces, and spices to whatever you're cooking. Check them out online at Kyven, and Kyven is K-Y-V-A-N, the number 82.com. So Kyven82.com to see all of their great products. TNT is also sponsored by Dr. Peter Candelora and the great folks over at Coastal Orthopedics. If you're living with joint pain, stop. Do what the Gridiron Greats do to get relief. Check out Coastal Orthopedics. You can find them online at bone-dr.com. Plus, check out our friends at the Louisville Slugger Museum and Factory. If you love baseball and you haven't been there, you gotta go. Find them online at sluggermuseum.com. And we want to give a shout-out to our good friends over at the Gridiron Greats organization. They're doing some wonderful things to help take care of the guys who played long before there were six-figure salaries in health care coverage. Check those guys out online and help them out at gridirongreats.org. Like Joe said, first up tonight in our 12th man segment, along with Sports One Marketing CEO and now best-selling author David Meltzer, is Hasim "The Rock" Rahman, former heavyweight champion of the world. He beat Lennox Lewis back in 2001 to capture the heavyweight title. We'll hear what he and David are working on together here in just a few minutes. Following them is going to be a guy who's becoming a regular now on the show, Pittsburgh sports talk radio and TV host Paul Alexander. You know me. I got to stay in touch with what the Steelers are doing over the offseason. Who did they like at the combine? What free agents maybe they be thinking about or talking to? We'll get an update from Paul when he joins us about 15 minutes from now. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to be joined by former Patriots and Seahawks defensive back Nesby Glasgow. It's been a couple of years since Nesby last joined us, so far too long since he's been here. Got to wonder how Nesby felt at the end of the Super Bowl. Nesby is also named on the All-Century team at the University of Washington, where he played his college ball along with our good friend Warren Moon. We'll get his thoughts on playing with Warren back in their college days, plus talk more about his time with the Colts and Seahawks when he joins us about 30 minutes from now. Later this hour, we're going to be joined by one of the greatest Steelers inside linebackers of all time, and like Joe said, our very first guest here on TNT almost 3.5 years ago. I've got his jersey on number 99, Mr. LeVon Kirkland. There's no one better for us to get some feedback on what the Steelers defense needs to do to improve upon than LeVon. We'll also get his thoughts on how much the Steelers are going to miss Dick LeBeau next season and what Keith Butler might change up when he joins us about 50 minutes from now. Then we're going to kick off the next hour with a guy who brings more passion to his interviews than perhaps anyone else on the planet, and that's former Saints, Rams, and Chiefs Pro Bowl guard Kyle Turley. It's been a little while since Kyle's also been with us on the show, and we've surely missed him. If you're a regular listener of the show, you know we play Kyle's song We Ride as our weekly outro music. And we love Kyle's music so much. And if you didn't know Kyle was a musician, you need to go and check out his stuff on iTunes. I'm telling you, it's fantastic. We're going to get an update on his music, plus his thoughts on what's going on around the NFL when he joins us a little over an hour from now. And then we're going to wrap up the show with our good friend and former Dolphins guard and Brooklyn Bolts head coach John Bach. So we're going to give you back-to-back passionate former guards in the last hour of the show, and I don't think it can get much better than going back-to-back with Kyle and John. I'm looking forward to getting John's take on Richie Incognito signing up in Buffalo. John should have an interesting take on that, plus his assessment of a couple of the DBs that played for his Brooklyn Bolts team that ended up signing with my Steelers as free agents. So, and John's got another really interesting story about another one of his former players that signed with the Redskins. We'll get all of that and more from John when he's here about 90 minutes from now. So as always, we're wall-to-wall with great guests for you tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate, and we thank you for taking this journey with us. But before we get started, let's bring in my co-host, Mr. Bob Lazzari. Bob, how are you tonight, my friend?
I'm doing as well as possible, Chris. How about yourself?
Not bad, Bob. It's like I was telling you off air, it's been a whirlwind ride for me today. Just flew back in from Miami. Unbelievable. Down in Miami for the start of this week, 89 degrees down there. So they were going to set a record high. Got on the flight from Miami a few hours ago, got back to Atlanta. It was 40 degrees. So a pretty big difference in temperature, but glad to be home. Glad to be on the show and sharing some time with you as always, my friend.
Yeah, the pleasure is always mine, Chris. It's just we're just doing time up here in New England, waiting for the next storm, which they're saying Sunday into Monday, and we will have reached March at the time, but the calendar means nothing here, Chris. So I guess I'm looking forward to April now. So opening day, I don't know. The weather's crazy.
Yeah, let's hope Fenway gets thawed out by then, right?
I think I read something, Chris, it's been the coldest February in 110 years, which, for the most part, is the coldest February ever, and I can attest to it. We've had more snow, I think a couple of years in the 90s, we had 100 or more inches of snow, but I can't remember anything colder. It's all ice. You've seen the pictures I've sent you. It's crazy, and just waiting for some melting to happen, that's all.
Good luck, my friend.
Thank you.
All right, we want to kick off the show like we do every week by saluting our military personnel listening in on the Armed Forces Radio Network. We want to pass along our sincere thanks to all of our veterans and everyone currently serving in every branch of the military and public service. Thank you. Thank you for the sacrifices you either made as a veteran or you're making now every day for every one of us. We appreciate what you do to protect the freedoms that we all have and the liberty which allows the rest of us to do what we do. Our sincere thanks as well to Sean Cruz and all the wonderful folks over at the Armed Forces Radio Network. It's an honor for us to be a part of your network. You can find our show by going to armedforcesradionetwork.org and also give those guys a follow on Twitter. That's important to them, too. You can find them at the AFRN for the Armed Forces Radio Network. I also want to remind everyone that you can stream or download our show for free from our site, ThursdayNightTailgate.com. Plus, our friends over at Boost Radio are streaming our show every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. You can go to BoostRadioNetwork.com and click on the on-air link that you're going to find in the upper right-hand corner of their homepage to hear us. You can also find us on iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, and you can take us with you everywhere you go on your mobile device by downloading the Stitcher or Player.fm app as well. All right, let's get things rolling with a message about our friends over at Kyven Foods, which is brought to you by former Bengals and Falcons tight end Reggie Kelly.
Add great flavor to your next tailgate party with Kyven Salsas. Former NFL tight end Reggie Kelly created these salsas for dipping chips and much more. In hot and mild flavors, Kyven salsas make a great marinade. They are terrific in meatloaf and are super toppers for everything from baked potatoes to scrambled eggs. It's a great ingredient to enjoy in a variety of family favorite meals. And some people say Kyven salsa is a meal to itself. With all the possibilities, Kyven is truly salsa with soul. Kyven salsas are also made from natural ingredients, and they are preservative-free. So look for Kyven, that's K-Y-V-A-N, at area Walmart stores or online. Click on the Kyven logo on our website to check retail and online locations. More information at Kyven82.com.
If you want your guests to be raving about your next house party or your next tailgate party, we got pitchers and catchers every ported. We got spring training, baseball. Get your tailgate parties ready. Be sure to serve them plenty of Kyven Foods salsas, sauces, and spices to liven up everything you're going to put on your spread. Be sure to check out their recipes that you can find on our site, ThursdayNightTailgate.com, as well as their own site, Kyven82.com. And give them a like on Facebook. That's important to them, too. Kyven, again, is K-Y-V-A-N, the number 82.com. You're going to appreciate the goodness. All right, now joining us on the Kyven Foods guest line in our weekly 12th Man segment is Sports One Marketing CEO and now best-selling author, Mr. David Meltzer, along with his special guest tonight, former boxing heavyweight champion of the world, Haseem The Rock Rahman. David, congratulations once again, my friend, on your book, Connected to Goodness, becoming a bestseller. We are so happy for you. So thanks for being here again tonight. What are you and The Rock working on together?
You know, we're trying to revitalize boxing, and we have so many great things going on, and I'm so honored. You know, I've been blessed when I work with Lee to have Lennox Lewis, Evander Holyfield, even Oscar De La Hoya, but The Rock is a different kind of fighter. He is an unbelievable, intelligent man who I got the fortunate happenstance last week to meet with him, and I was blown away. And so I was hoping Rock could give us a little bit of insight on maybe the Mayweather fight first and what the future of boxing holds and where he sees the future of boxing, and let him tell you kind of what we're planning on doing, if that sounds okay.
Absolutely. Rock, how are you?
Excellent. I'm feeling real good. It's a movement. I'm trying to be a part of it.
there you go.
So, Rock, what do you think about the Mayweather fight? Is this one step in revitalizing boxing?
What was that? Excuse me.
The Mayweather fight. What do you think? Do you think this will be a great step in revitalizing boxing?
Actually, I think it's a few different things, pieces moving to revitalize boxing. Number one, Pacquiao Mayweather, of course. I think it'll be a phenomenal fight. And then they got boxing coming back to network TV. And that's when everybody knew who boxers was, when Muhammad Ali, Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, they was on everybody's television. It wasn't pay-per-view, it was free-per-view. They all got to watch these people through the Olympics and watch them win world titles and fall in love with them and just follow their whole career. So I think it's definitely on the right path towards becoming mainstream in America once again.
I agree, and I think, you know, the things that we're working on in combining other celebrities and other content with it, you know, and the combination of being interactive with different musicians and artists as well as the actual fights themselves, just providing a night of entertainment on TV, highlighted by, in the world, technicians in the ring, and our true courageous heroes of revitalizing the sport. And I think just the mere interest in other martial arts and in other contact sports shows you that there is so much potential for boxing if we put it back into every home without having to, you know, have a $300 million payday and these fights. And we'll build that brand back up to what it used to be.
Rock, when you think about, you know, you got the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. Who are some of the other fighters that you've watched or you're excited about that, you know, now, to your point, now that we get, you know, boxing back on, you know, network TV where it's affordable for everyone to watch, it's just part of the networks, right? Are there other fighters out there that you think that now we're going to get some exposure to that, to David's point, can start to revitalize the sport?
Well, for one, I think you got the heavyweight champion, one of the heavyweight champions, Deontay Wilder, who's 33-0 with 32 knockouts, American undefeated heavyweight. I think he's one to watch. He just won the title over Bermain Stiverne. First time he went the distance, he's 6'7". He can punch with both hands. He's exciting, charismatic heavyweight. I think he's one to watch. You got a lot of young fighters coming up. I like this young Olympian, Errol Spence. I think he's definitely going to be a pound-for-pound contestant in the very near future. You got Marcus Brown, another Olympian. It's so many young fighters that's out there that America is about to get introduced to. So, you know, if you keep your eye on these guys, there's some real special talent out there that I think is going to take us by storm. And I don't think we're going to be missing, because Mayweather and Pacquiao, irrespective of who wins or who loses, they're on their way out. So we need some new blood, and we got plenty of it coming.
Rock, update our listeners on what you're doing now.
Well, Dave?
I'm doing a lot of community work. In fact, I just left. I'm in Baltimore right now, and I just left Ray Lewis, and he's doing some service with some John Hopkins and ex-con, and getting them back in shape mentally, physically, and spiritually. And I just witnessed their workout today, and I mean, they inspired me so much that they forced me to just try to get on that path, get myself in shape, and just make sure that I'm doing the right thing. We're doing a number of different things with trying to just take these gangs off the streets of Vegas, the streets of Baltimore. I mean, it's just somebody's got to do it. We've got to take these streets back.
There you go. That's David, awesome. I'm sorry I interrupted your thought.
No, no problem. I just was going to say that part of revitalizing boxing, the advantage is if you realize, since we've had all this social networking and all the different mediums of communication, boxing hasn't been revitalized. And so one of the aspects of boxing that's so tremendous is that you have the ability to have these people are so recognizable. In a lot of sports, like football, for example, one of the difficulties we have in branding the heroes is the helmet itself and the uniform. And here, these boxers, as these young boxers that are extremely fit, tremendously athletic, unlike anyone before them, if we have them with these charismatic personalities, intelligent young men who are technicians in the ring, I think that we can have the big personalities and even bigger than the NBA uses their personalities. As you know, football has to be a team marketed sport. Basketball is an individual marketed sport. Here, boxing is the ultimate premier one-on-one marketed sport, and that's why guys like Mayweather and Pacquiao have such strong brands. But I think overall in boxing, in every different division, every different boxer, we can create all these different characters, personalities, and brands that can be monetized and also create significant changes. You know, we like to do give back to the community, but, you know, we used to do a ton of PSAs. I know Rock gives back to the community, which is why we're involved with them, by volunteering their time, boxing, public service announcements. For example, with spousal abuse, a huge issue. You put these guys on TV and you say, real men don't hit women, and it's a heavyweight champion that's saying it. It can carry a serious message around our communities of how we need to improve on ourselves and treat everyone with equality and respect.
That's, you see, that's what boxing, David, is missing right there.
Thanks, Ross.
That's great stuff, fellas. David, you have a book signing coming up this weekend in San Diego, right?
Yeah, thanks. We have Barnes & Noble, you know, just taking the book around the country, and I've had a few book signings in New Orleans last week, and now I'm in San Diego on Saturday in Grossmont Center. If anyone's around San Diego, I know we got a lot of military there, a lot of military listening. Love to have you at Grossmont Center, Barnes & Noble, at 3 p.m. this Saturday. And, of course, finally, I want to remind you that, you know, my best friend, my business partner, Warren Moon, is being honored by the Unstoppable Foundation as the Humanitarian of the Year.
Right.
We have a Warren Moon Challenge at warrenmoonchallenge.com. And I especially want to give my thanks to Rock for taking his time in the freezing cold in Baltimore. I'm here in New York, so it must be even colder there. But, you know, this guy's a hero to so many and just such a tremendous person. We're honored to have you on my segment and on the show. So thank you, Rock.
You're most definitely welcome, and I'd like to congratulate you on all your success. I hope the book does phenomenal numbers. And I'd like to also thank Joe Lake and Dan Cash. Us as a team, we're going to make big things happen for so many people.
Definitely.
That's great stuff. Great.
Well, Chris, thank you so much.
Rock, thank you so much for being a part of the show tonight and being a guest with David here on the 12th Man segment. David, I can't thank you enough for everything that you do, and congratulations once again on the bestseller status. And, folks, if you're in and around San Diego on Saturday, check him out at Barnes & Noble. That's some great stuff, David. Thanks again for being here tonight.
My pleasure. I'll talk to you next week.
Take care.
All right. Take care, David. Rock, thank you very much. All the best.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. David Meltzer and Rock Rahman, former heavyweight champion of the world, joining us tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate. We've got our next guest, Paul Alexander, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Paul just on the other side of this station identification.
This is Reggie Kelly, former Cincinnati Bengals and Atlanta Falcons tight end, and you're listening to TNT, Thursday Night Tailgate. Brace yourself for the explosion.
All right, now back with us on the Kyven Foods guest line is Paul Alexander. This is Paul's fourth appearance with us on the show. We have really enjoyed getting Paul's insights on what's going on in the Pittsburgh sports scene. He's been the sports director at KDKA News Radio AM 1020 and on the TV side as well. He's been a sports anchor and a reporter for KDKA. He was the morning drive time host on Sports Radio 937 The Fan up in Pittsburgh. He does the pre- and post-game shows for the Pirates and Penguins for Root Sports, as well as doing some freelancing for the Big Ten Network. And he's back with us tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate. We are so honored to have him. Paul, how you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing well, guys. A little cold, but other than that, hanging in there. How are you?
Great.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you. I bet you are. So, Paul, I gotta ask you, with Le'Veon Bell expected to be suspended for the first two games next season, are you expecting the Steelers to do some free agent running back shopping, or do you think they're going to wait and try to address it sometime in the draft?
You know, that's a great question, because right now, and as they, you know, showed toward the end of the year, you know, once LeGarrette Blount was gone, you know, so was their depth at running back. So it's something you can do later in the draft. I think running backs, along with receivers, you know, can get up to speed pretty quickly, and they would need somebody to get up to speed very quickly, because it would probably be the first two games of the year that, you know, they will be without their star running back. So I think they probably will address it maybe in the draft, but there will always be one of those late cuts in the preseason that they'll find somebody that will probably fit a nice number two role on their team.
Any idea is there anybody that they're talking about on the list? I've heard a lot of rumors flying around about, you know, this guy or that guy from a free agent standpoint. We had C.J. Spiller on the show a couple of weeks ago, and boy, he'd look good in the black and gold as a guy very similar to Le'Veon Bell, maybe a little smaller, but still, you know, a guy that can catch the ball out of the backfield. I'd sure like to see him in a Steeler uniform.
Yeah, I don't think the Steelers would mind that one bit. They have unfortunately been for the last several years, you know, right up against the cap. So if C.J. Spiller on the free agent market is going to, you know, garner any kind of bidding war, I think that would knock the Steelers out immediately just because they are so tight. Keep in mind what they're busy doing right now is trying to re-sign Ben Roethlisberger to an extension. That is not going to be cheap.
Right.
You saw what that did with the Ravens. You saw what that, you know, does in Denver. You see what it does when you have a big-time franchise quarterback. That makes it very difficult to fill out the rest of that roster financially and with the cap. So I think that's probably going to be the priority. I think running back depth is something that you can address relatively easily. I don't think it's going to be something that'll really be difficult. I mean, two games in the NFL, unfortunately, is significant, but I don't think the Steelers are going to do anything crazy just for those two games.
You talk about restructuring Ben's contract. He's going to be 33 next week. Does finding his eventual replacement start to become a priority? Probably not this year, but maybe next year or, you know, 2 years from now?
Yeah, you know what? It's so strange anymore. There always used to be a quarterback in waiting. That just doesn't happen anymore. Granted, franchise quarterbacks are far and few between. You know, the Steelers last had one in 1979. It took them 30-some years to find the next one when they finally drafted Ben Roethlisberger. So I really don't believe that that is really much. I don't think that is even probably something they're considering. I don't think when you're going to re-sign Ben probably to a five-year deal that you're thinking about the next Ben or the next franchise guy. You know, Bruce Bradkowski, I think, is a solid number two. I think they're pretty solid at quarterback. He can win games for you in a pinch. But I really don't think they have entered into finding the next Ben Roethlisberger just yet.
Paul, I got to believe if they're going to address anything in the draft on the offensive side, it's probably going to be tight end. I mean, Heath Miller starting to get a little long in the tooth. I think trying to find his replacement at some point here becomes a priority. Matt Spaeth is a free agent, but he's not the receiving threat that a Heath Miller is. Do you think they'll address tight end in the draft, or could we see that something on a free agent side, maybe a guy like a Jordan Cameron or maybe an Owen Daniels come to Pittsburgh?
Yeah, you know what? Those are two names that I think that would look great in Steeler uniforms because they do need immediate help. For the first time ever watching Heath Miller, one, he dropped a couple of balls, which is just unheard of. I mean, he was like Velcro for his entire career. Still getting the job done, I think, as a blocker, and that's a big part of what the Steelers do with their tight end. But, yeah, I would think they would love to address that in the draft and get somebody that they can groom. It doesn't look, unfortunately, like Heath has much left. It really doesn't. I hate to say that. One of my favorite Steelers of all time.
Yeah.
One of the great guys to ever wear a Steeler uniform. But he looked very human last year, and that's not a good sign. And it's just age. I mean, it happens to everybody, and I think it's starting to happen to Heath pretty quickly.
Bob, questions for Paul?
Yeah, Paul, it's great to speak with you again. And I think that what went under the radar this year a lot, Paul, was how good their kicking game was. I mean, you know, when you think of the Steelers, you know the guys like the kickers aren't going to get the props like a lot of the superstars always do. But Sweezum, 29 out of 32. I don't think he missed between 40 and 50 yards. Incredibly solid kicker who is very underrated.
Yeah, he is super solid. Also, my good friend Greg Warren, who's another one of those unsung heroes. If that snap doesn't get back there, all of a sudden the kicking game can go a little crazy. But, yeah, Sweezum's been unbelievable. The Steelers have always had, I think, for the majority of their existence, a pretty reliable and a pretty solid kicker. And you made the point, from 40 to 50, he's simply invincible. I mean, he'll miss the occasional, you know, 32-yarder, which, you know, you just scratch your head. But, yeah, I think they're very solid there. They have been struggling mightily to find a punter. I'm not sure if they have the guy they really want to stick with right now. But, you know, those hidden yards, the thing that I love is they throw Antonio Brown back there. And, boy, does that turn a field, that flips a field, that changes the game, that puts everybody on alert, puts everybody on notice. And by the end of the game, those hidden yards, you know, where your field position is, where you start, where the opponent starts, in a very tight game, in a very close season, you know, where a win or two here and there could be the difference between winning a division or, you know, making a wild card. Yeah, you better be, you know, very sound in the kicking game. And I think they really need to find a punter that they can rely on. They got to find better guys, you know, on coverage. I mean, you have to do a better job. They have to find a kick returner. That's something that they better address in the draft as well. And I think they're done with the 5-5, you know, let's go find the next speed demon that's going to return kicks for us. That has just not worked for them all in the last three or four attempts.
And, Paul, do you get the idea or the feeling among the Steelers brass or anyone in the Pittsburgh media that they have any reservations about Bell's off-the-field antics, or was this just a young guy who might have learned his lesson and they expect good things for years from this guy?
Yeah, I think they're very comfortable with his character overall. Granted, you know, you don't want to start the year with your star running back, you know, serving a two-game suspension, but hopefully it's lessons learned. Seems like a great guy. You just look at his workout regimen. I mean, he came to camp last year chiseled at 228 or 229 pounds. I mean, this guy has a work ethic. He seems to be a wonderfully accessible, affable, you know, just seems like a regular, you know, good guy, just maybe kind of being a little stupid now and again, which at 21, 22 years of age, there's a lot of stupid left in you at that point.
Paul, I've got some buddies telling me how good Shamarco Thomas is going to be and how he needs to be Troy's replacement next season. And I keep wondering what anybody could be basing that on.
What have your buddies seen that I haven't seen? I mean, Shamarco Thomas is a guy in college that would deliver an occasional big hit. I haven't seen him cover anybody. I haven't seen him make an impactful play. I haven't seen anyone or heard anyone say, you know, this guy's just a great practice player. I mean, there's very little that he's shown. He doesn't really show up on special teams where you would like to see him make an impact. So I don't know what your buddies are seeing or who they're talking to. Maybe Shamarco's agent has somehow gotten to your buddies and tried to spread some good news out there. But, you know, unfortunately, I think safety, because of the lack of potential of Shamarco, I do believe that safety is going to be a very, maybe even a first-round priority in the draft coming in April.
Yeah, so I guess that was the question. Has there been anything that you've seen or heard from a practice perspective? Have they held him out? Because, you know, when I look at the kind of defensive backfield rotation, and when they reach back out to get Will Allen back in there, a 10-year vet, has there been anything in practice or any sign at all that anyone has seen that this guy is actually capable of playing? You know, maybe he's a great special teamer, or a good special teamer, but a great, a potential defensive backer, potential safety on the Steelers roster?
Right now, I think safety is,
or is there just
is
nothing?
A big question mark. I mean, there's nothing there that anyone has seen so far. Normally, by your third year, I mean, that's when, you know, the really significant players, the guys that are going to be counted upon to be big-time players and playmakers, you know, that's when they're ready to take over. That's when they're ready to show that, all right, this is why you drafted me. This is why I went when I did, and this is why I'm here. No, none of that comes to mind. Very little as far as potential is really being talked about with Shamarco right now.
Paul, I know teams aren't going to tip their hand before the draft, but were there any guys that you've heard that you maybe the Steelers liked, or stock on their draft board rose when they walked away from the combine? Anyone that they saw that they might have liked a little better than what anyone else?
You know, Kevin Colbert, like most guys in the NFL, if they were to mention a few names, I'd tell you that in the world's biggest poker game, it meant that there was no chance or likelihood in the world that they were going to draft them. I mean, they just, every information that leaked out, that was thrown out, you know, prior to the draft, is just a big, big Lars. You know, I mean, they're throwing stuff out there to try to misdirect. And I just don't think of anyone. There's a couple people you certainly look at and you say, wow, that can maybe, you know, fill some needs. That would certainly address some issues. But, no, as far as names, you look at the mock drafts. I mean, I'll start looking, you know, in a couple of weeks. I don't like to get too caught up in that too early. But you know, those mock drafts, I mean, these guys are getting pretty good at that. You know, a lot of these guys will get, 16, 17 of the picks correct. So I don't ignore them like I used to because I think they're getting pretty close.
The Steelers have got the toughest schedule, I think, in the NFL next season, which may be a blessing, Paul, since they can't seem to beat teams like the Raiders or the Jets or the Bucks.
I was going to say, what would be better for the Steelers? I mean, they absolutely thrive against the better teams. And, you know, of course, you know, the Jets or something like that. I mean, you know, the teams that are at their absolute worst are the Steelers' worst nightmare. I mean, just something like the losses they've had to the Raiders when the Raiders were at an all-time low, and a Texans loss comes into mind when they were really just I think they were a two-win football team, and one of those wins was against the Steelers all not, you know, that long ago. So, yeah, I don't think – and, again, when you figure that free agency doesn't start until March 10th, you know, the draft isn't even, you know, that close to us yet. We have no idea what the rosters of these teams are going to be. Sure, we know, you know, what teams have the big-time coaches and the big-time franchise quarterbacks and the playmakers. But, you know, I mean, all of a sudden, say an Adrian Peterson is in Indianapolis, or, I mean, you know, there's going to be some significant moves that are going to happen between now and September. They're going to change, you know, how we feel about teams dramatically. So to go ahead and assess that, you know, toughest schedule right now is a little premature.
Bob, one more for Paul before we let him go.
Yeah, sure. Paul, up here in New England, of course, everything it revolves around Belichick, and we constantly hear about his work ethic, how he eats, sleeps, and drinks football constantly. And I guess in every way, each coach has to have a little bit of that in them. Just wanted to get your take on Mike Tomlin, his off-season dedication. What kind of day does he lead around January, February? Is it a 12-month job?
No, he's an extremely well-rounded guy. He's the father of young children. He shows up at a lot of Penguin games, Pitt basketball games. You'll see him at Pirate games in the summer before, you know, they start getting real serious about camp. So I think Mike Tomlin is a very dedicated head coach. I think he's a pretty good one. But no, he doesn't eat, drink. You know, he's not like Dick Vermeil. He's not gonna put a cot in the office so he can sleep there, and you know, not even, you know, go to sleep, you know, during the week. He doesn't have that bunker mentality year round. But like anyone that's a head coach in the NFL, he takes his job pretty seriously. But I don't think it's to the extreme that maybe a Belichick or some of these other guys, you know, the legendary, you know, workaholics. He's not that guy.
Paul, remind our listeners how they can follow you both online and over social media.
It is PAlexander44. That is my handle on Twitter. And, you know, check us out on Root Sports. We're starting to get busy with the Pirates coming up. So we're going to have some days where we have the Pirates in the afternoon, Penguins in the evening. So we're getting excited for the stretch run in the NHL. And, you know, some people have the Pirates as high as 3, you know, in their power ranking. So that's been a long, long time coming. So, people are pretty excited about baseball in Pittsburgh again.
Yeah, that's awesome. Paul, thanks for coming back on the show and joining us again.
Anytime,
you're
guys.
So
it's
fantastic when you're here.
Oh, it's
all
so
right.
Much
take
fun
care, Paul. We'll
guys,
catch up soon.
You.
All the best to you and your family.
All right, guys. All the best.
Good night.
Take care.
Thanks, Paul. Good night.
All right.
So, Bob, you know, I mean, clearly I can never get enough Steelers, and having Paul as a resource and sharing his insights, fantastic. I tell you what, you know, I think this is going to be an interesting offseason in Pittsburgh. I think we've got so many holes to fill on the defensive side of the ball. And then to Paul's point, you know, Heath Miller has been a great Steeler, and boy, that guy takes a pounding over the middle. And at some point, that was gonna come to an end. I fear that time is pretty close. But with Paul, I agree. One of my favorite Steelers of all time for just how hard nosed he was or has been, and what a reliable tight end he's been for many years.
Yeah, just kind of like you know, the tight ends we have had over the years in Dallas here in New York. I mean, you can count on these guys suited up every week, Chris. And Paul is very, very forthcoming. He knows the the Steelers have a decent offense, some great players to build around. They just have to get that defense and special teams back to where it once was, and that's how they have to compete.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, we've got our next guest, Nesby Glasgow, hanging on the line. Going to get to Nesby on the other side of this station identification.
This is Christine Lisi, and you're listening to Thursday Night Tailgate, where NFL stars go to tell their stories with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari on the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Now joining us on the Kyven Foods guest line is Nesby Glasgow. It's been nearly 2.5 years since Nesby last joined us, and that's far too long. Let me remind you, though, about his background. He's from Los Angeles, California, played his college ball at the University of Washington, where he was a two-time All-Pac-10 and All-American selection. In 1978, he led the Pac-10 in punt returns, and he's still listed among the University of Washington's record holders in longest punt returns and punt return yards. He was teammates with our good friend Warren Moon when he was at Washington and was a part of their 1977 team that beat Michigan in the Rose Bowl. Nesby was named to the University of Washington All-Century Team. He was an eighth-round draft pick by the Baltimore Colts in 1979, and he played in the NFL from 79 to 1992 with the Colts and the Seahawks. And over that time, he played in 205 games, recorded 9 sacks, 15 interceptions, recovered 17 fumbles, tallied nearly 2,600 return yards, and scored a couple of touchdowns. And we are certainly glad to finally have him back with us tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate. Nesby, Chris, and Bob, how have you been, my friend?
Hey, I've been doing great, but I've been gone too long.
You haven't gone too long. We agree.
Nice to have you back.
So, Nesby,
it's great to be back.
You were an all-timer at the University of Washington. How does a kid from L.A. end up in the northern part of the Pac-10 and not at USC or UCLA? How did you escape those two schools?
Well, UCLA would have given me a scholarship. There was a tragedy that occurred my senior year of high school, that the city player of the year, Kenneth Smith, who was the national hurdler champion, he was a running back, he got injured our senior year at Gardena High School. And UCLA was recruiting Kenny, myself, and another teammate of mine, Antoine Richardson. And they performed surgery on Kenny. The anesthesiologist gave him to his anesthesia, and he died. And it was just...
Wow.
It went sideways. It was a grave tragedy that we still, to this day, has been tough trying to overcome. And what happened was Jim Moore was on that UCLA staff, and he and Don James had made a pact years ago, if one of them become a head coach, then they would make the other, defensive or offensive coordinator. So when Don James got the head coaching job at Washington, he made Jim Moore defensive coordinator. And Jim Moore, said, I got these two guys in L.A., that you guys need to look at now. We're interested in them, and he didn't say why. I don't know if he said why they backed off, but make a long story short, University of Washington got interested in Antoine and I, and we went there, and the rest is history. I had dreams of playing at SC, though, but they said I was too small. Only weighed like 160-something pounds in high school. So anyway. I'm so
wow.
grateful that I got a chance to come into the great Northwest and play for Don James. Just such a great man and such a great coach to play for.
You played up there with our good friend Warren Moon for a couple of seasons at Washington. What was it like going up against Warren every day at practice?
Well, I tell you what was interesting. We came in the same year. Warren was a junior college transfer. Back in those days, when you went to junior college, you were really relegated to stay there 2 years. Don James was so smart, he went down and looked at a wide receiver by the name of Leon Garrett, and he liked Warren so much, he said, Warren, I will give you a scholarship right now. So he signed them both, and they came up in 1975. And from the very first practice, those of us on defense knew Warren was the best quarterback. And he ended up, winning the starting job. The Husky fan base wasn't happy with, having a young black guy be the quarterback. But in the end, Warren persevered and proved that, Don James did make the right choice. He was the right guy. And they say the rest is history.
Yeah, indeed. Bob, questions for Nesby?
Sure, Nesby, I just wanted to get your feeling. I asked this to a lot of the guests on draft day back in 79. Any expectations picked in the eighth round? You know, some people would say, you know, that that's a tough place to be picked, Nesby, but did it give you more incentive to succeed in the NFL, which you did?
Well, no, not really. I broke my ankle in the Senior Bowl.
Oh.
So I was damaged good. In fact, I was on the phone with Don Shula, and he was talking to me, and he said, look, you know, based on your injuries, we're not expecting you to play, but we realize, you know, it's a great advantage for us to get you this year and roll the dice in hopes that you can come back and show us you're that player that we saw that we anticipated drafting in the early rounds. And back in those days, in 1979, it's not like it is today, the phone beeped, that meant somebody else was on the line. And I remember, I told Coach Shula, Coach Shula, I hope this is not Baltimore, because he told me Baltimore had the next choice, and it was Ted Marchibroda. And Ted Marchibroda said the same thing, that we don't expect you to be able to play this year, and blah, blah, blah. But I told him then, I said, Coach, that may not be your expectations, but if I can play, I will play. And I went out there, and after I got drafted, I was just getting off my crutches, and then I came back in July, and I ended up practicing and became a backup, and then I finally became a starter. So, you know, I've always been able to have a lot of faith in me and my ability, and I've always been able to persevere. And I've always told everyone my cup is always half full as opposed to being half empty.
That 79 season, I think it's 79 in Baltimore, Chris. You think of the Orioles, you think that was just such a great sports town, Nesby. And you played in the old Memorial Stadium where I used to go a few times every summer. I used to make the trip down there. And just remember, it's just a very special place, Nesby, kind of a neighborhood setting. Give us your memories of the old Memorial Stadium.
I would say this, probably the Memorial Stadium was the second worst stadium in the league next to Cleveland Stadium. When it would rain outside, our locker room would flood, and a lot of times we would just go home to take a shower. I mean, it was just, it was one of those stadiums. I remember one of the fans said that, you know, well, Johnny Unitas played there. I said, well, that should let you know they need to build a new stadium. But we had great fans. You know, the problem we had was that Bob Irsay wasn't really a good owner. He actually didn't even live in the state, wasn't even part of the community. I think his son Jimmy, you know, in spite of his issues off the field or whatever you want to call it, he's done a great job of running the team. He's done a great job of taking care of players that played for him. Whereas with his father, he would come into the locker room and he would look up to see who he was talking to. And one time we played a trick on him, myself and another teammate named Kim Anderson. So we switched lockers. And sure enough, he called me Kim, and he called him Nesby.
Nice.
That's great. Nesby, you were with the Colts from 79 to 87, like Bob said. So you were there when the Mayflower trucks rolled up and packed everything up and moved out to Indy. We had some of your teammates have been on the show, and they've told us, you know, some stories about what that was like for them, and that they found out sort of like everyone else. They saw it happening on the news. How did you find out about the move, and what was that like for you?
Well, first and foremost, I have to tell you a story if I have time. Ernie Accorsi was really Bob Irsay's right-hand man at the time, and for some reason he had given me his personal phone number, and he said, Nesby, if you ever have an issue, give me a call. So, once again, I was supposed to be drafted, you know, in the early rounds. You know, didn't happen. I ended up starting my rookie year. I forgot the general manager's name. Lee Steinberg was my agent. We go back to talk to him after my rookie year. He says no. So, he says, but let's see how he does as his second year. My second year was just as good. He said, no, again, I want you to play out the contract. So after I had a third good year, you know, he gives me this crappy offer. And I call Ernie up and I said, Ernie, you gave me your card, and I'm calling you because his name was Dick something. You know, I said, Ernie, I'm one of the few guys that can walk around here and fans are happy to see because I play hard each and every game, and I'm not one of the reasons why our record is what it is. And he said, I agree, Nesby. He said, but what's going on? So I told him what was going on, and that was the first year that the NFL had really given out what guys were making. And so I said, Ernie, I have a list in front of me. It shows what my constituents are making, and regardless of our record, I'm not a lower-end player. And I said, you know, it was nobody's fault that I broke my ankle in the Senior Bowl. But I said, Ernie, if I'm not paid, I'm not coming back. And I said, Ernie, is that a threat? I said, because I don't make threats. And I said, when you look at the numbers and you look when you look at what other guys around the league are making, I'm not going to be one of the highest or the lowest, but I'm going to be up there somewhere. And make a long story short, he told me to give him 2 hours. Chris, he came back with me in 2 hours. He said, Nesby, I have a ticket for you tomorrow. Fly to Chicago. Meet the team attorney. We've already put together, we're in the process of putting together a contract. We've agreed to the numbers you asked for. We're going to fax the copy to Lee. When you get to the airport, we'll do a line-by-line item check of that. If everything works out, sign the check. Sign the check. No, sign the agreement. Go have a check for you, and you jump back on the plane and go back home. That's how I got my second contract.
Wow.
But I had just moved to Baltimore in 83 when that happened. I was actually watching the Washington, D.C. news, and it came on 30 minutes, at least the sports station, before the Baltimore, right? And I was like channel surfing.
Yep.
And I hear the guy on the news says to me, he says that we have it from a reliable source that the Colts may be moving. Then he said, hold everything. We have just gotten confirmation. There are Mayflower trucks out in front of the Colts complex. We'll be back with a live station feed after station break. And now I'm glued to the TV. I come back. They show the snow. They show the trucks. I jump in my car. I go up there. The locker room's in disarray. Everything's jacked up. They just took everything. I go back home. I start calling my teammates. And I said, you know, every year, the last couple of years, they've talked about we're moving to Memphis. We're moving to L.A. We're moving somewhere in Florida. I said, well, we're not coming back to Baltimore. I said, right now, there are Mayflower trucks out in front of the complex. And they are taking our stuff to Indianapolis. And that's how we all found out. That's how we found out.
That's amazing.
Yep.
Nesby, I got to ask you. We had Doug Nettles on the show a couple of weeks ago, and I asked Doug, tell me about Nesby. He said, tell Nesby he was a great student, and he learned everything from me. So I got to ask you, what was it like playing with Doug?
Doug was fun to play with. But I didn't learn everything from Doug.
I'm sure you didn't. So, Nesby, before we let you go, I got to ask you a couple of questions. I'm always interested. Your rookie season, you returned a punt 75 yards for a touchdown against the Patriots. Can you describe to me what the feeling is like when you break into the clear and you're running free and you know you're about to bring this ball back to the house? What's that like?
You know what? You feel great. You know, that's one of the times where it's one of those moments that you always remember and you always cherish because that's something, you know, you've always dreamed about. It's like playing in the 1978 Rose Bowl. When we went to Disneyland and rode on the train, that was something I dreamed about as a kid, riding on that train as part of a Rose Bowl team, and that occurred. When I ran that punt back, you know, that was another dream of mine, that I was going to be able to run a punt back, and I was able to do that. So, you know, I should have ran a kickoff back, too. That's another story. But it was one of those things that as a kid, you think about it, you dream it, you envision it, you see yourself accomplishing it, and then when it occurs, you know, you said, hey, I did it. I was able to do it. I think if you ask anybody that's returned a kickoff or a punt, they saw themselves returning that kickoff or that punt. It wasn't like, I'm surprised I was able to do it. Yeah, I mean, you're not. You're like, I expected to do more, actually.
Nesby, before we let you go, I got to ask you, as a former member of the Seahawks, What was your opinion about how the Super Bowl ended?
You know, here's my take on it, and I'm going to be a little long-winded. I think, because somebody asked me this question on Friday when I was in Arizona. The biggest difference between coaches today and coaches when I played was that coaches when I played ran plays that worked. I think too many times coaches today want it to be about the plays that they call. And I'll give you an example. From 79, when I first got into the league, to about 83, anytime the Pittsburgh Steelers got in a red or a split formation on the goal line, they were running the trap. Everybody in the league knew they were running the trap. But guess what? Could nobody stop it? And what I mean by that, in that situation, those guys could not stop Marshawn Lynch. When you look on the sideline and you see Tom Brady with a towel over his face, they've already given up because he just ran the ball from the five down to the two. So why are you calling that play? And if you are going to call that play, don't run that play with a light-ass receiver. You run that play with somebody who's big, strong, that can at least fight off a defensive back. But first and foremost, you run what works. And if it took them giving the ball to Marshawn Lynch every play, guess what? Nobody would have cared because you know what? New England Patriots had already realized that they could not stop Marshawn Lynch that day. He ran them over time and time again. And so you can talk about all the pros and cons, but at the end of the day, that was a coaching error. And, I mean, coaches like players, they make mistakes. And they may never say that, but at the end of the day, if more coaches were to run plays that worked instead of running away from plays that work, they'd be more successful, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Nesby, before we let you go, tell our listeners how they can follow you.
I have one more thing to say, too. Even if that play would have worked, there would have been those that said, why'd they run that play? I mean, so it doesn't make sense to guys that have played the game for them to call that and run that.
There you go. All right. We agree. I couldn't agree with you more, by the way. I think some of us are still scratching our heads over that play. Nesby, how can our listeners follow you online and over social media?
You know, I'm on Facebook at Nesby Glasgow. I have a Twitter, it's Nesby G. I have a guy that runs my Twitter account, so just type in Nesby, I'm sure I'll come up. But I'm doing some big things out here in Seattle. I'm about to start getting involved more on the social side of things, and you know, but I'm somewhat of a dinosaur too. I'm an old school kind of guy. But I have a good buddy of mine, he's trying to hit me to all the trends and stuff. You know, right now I'm just busy chasing around my grandkids.
There you go. Good for you. Nesby, it's been far too long, and I hope it's not nearly this long before we have you come back because there's so many more things we'd love to get into with you. So thank you for being a part of the show tonight, and I hope you'll come back again real soon.
Hey, thanks for having me, and feel free to call me anytime. You know, I have the gift of gab, and it's not a problem for me to call in and have a conversation, especially about a game that I loved and cherished for so many years.
Well, that's awesome. Thanks, Nesby. All the best to you and your family.
Care.
We'll catch up with you again real soon. Take care.
All right, take care. Good night.
Great stuff, Bob. So many things to get in with Nesby. You know, he was there when Eric Dickerson came to the Colts, based on, you know, with that trade. He spent time there when the Colts drafted Arch Sleaster, some things I'd love to talk about that. And, of course, the Elway-Chris Hinton trade. So lots of good times and good information to get from Nesby. We'll have him back on real soon.
Yeah, very interesting guy, Chris, and any guy that had played 14 years in the NFL. And I think he would even agree against guys that were probably much bigger than he was. 14 years in the league and had the kind of success he had. Literally coast to coast, he played in indoor, outdoor, everything. If you read up on him, it's a fascinating career. And yeah, we'd love to speak with him again.
Absolutely right. All right, we've got our next guest hanging on the line, now making his fourth appearance on the Kyven Foods guest line, is our first ever guest on this show, Mr. LaVon Kirkin. Let me remind you a little bit about LaVon's background. He's from Lamar, South Carolina, and was a second-round draft pick in 1992 by the Pittsburgh Steelers out of Clemson, where he was a consensus All-American in 1991. He's also a member of their All-Century team and was inducted into their Hall of Fame in 2001. He was also inducted into the South Carolina Athletic Hall of Fame in 2008. He played in the NFL from 1992 to 2002, and all but two of those seasons were with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and those other two teams don't make any difference at all. He was selected to the Pro Bowl in back-to-back years in 96 and 97, was named to the All-Decade Team of the 1990s, and he spent the last two seasons as defensive coordinator down at Florida A&M, and we are so thrilled to have him back with us tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, LaVon, thanks for being back on the show with us tonight.
Hey, it's my honor. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, LaVon.
Mm-hmm.
LaVon, we like to focus on the positive things here on Thursday Night Tailgate, so I want to quickly get through and beyond the last couple of years at Florida A&M with you. We had Ernie Mills on the show last week, and like I said to Ernie, the timing that Florida A&M let Earl Holmes go during homecoming week seems crazy to me, LaVon. Some kind of personal, if you will, between maybe he and Kellen Winslow, who was the athletic director before he resigned back in December. How do you feel about how things went down and played out there at Florida A&M?
Well, honestly, it was a great experience for me. Let me first tell you that, for me to get a chance to coach college football, and I totally enjoyed coaching. I thought it was a little bit personal between both of those guys. I also thought that maybe A.D. Winslow maybe pulled the trigger a little early. If you really examine the team, we're actually getting a whole lot better. We're definitely improving. And it takes time. It really does, as far as a college team sometimes. I mean, sometimes you have teams that have success very early. But we were grinding, and we were working hard, and the guys were actually buying to what we were trying to sell. We had won two games prior to that firing, so it was really surprising, and it was kind of a mass scramble. I know he might have thought that he had his reasons, but it seemed like he kind of ran the team like we were a professional football team, that he was a GM and everything was equal, and we were just not getting the job done. But I think with everything, you have to have great relationships. Unfortunately, for all of us, I don't think those two guys had a great relationship. They didn't have a vision in mind. Everybody didn't buy into the plan. And it was unfortunate. It really was, because, we were actually getting better. If you look at the last four games, we played extremely well. Probably two games we definitely should have won. But, I think when you're building, it's going to take time. And he only had like a year and a half. And I think it was a shame, because now there's kind of bitter blood between Coach Holmes and the family. So it's unfortunate. But, you move on from these situations, you get better, you reevaluate things, and you move forward.
Mm-hmm. Any new coaching opportunities on the horizon for you, LaVon?
Right now, no. I had some opportunities, but they kind of fell through. But, I look at this situation as a chance for me to, the last 7 years have been really tough, as far as my wife having cancer, her passing away during the season last year, us not really, coming so close and not winning some games. We really honestly should have won six games last year for sure. We let three slip away, but, it's a tough time. But now, just kind of reevaluate myself. I know I'll get an opportunity soon enough. I think I'll get either an opportunity, either college ball or pro ball. But, right now I'm just trying to develop myself. And, that may be an opportunity for me to develop younger athletes. Guys are in high school, guys are in college, guys are in middle school, to really give back
my experience and my know-how, and I'm just working on improving that. You know, begin my master's in August, and enjoy being a father of a little girl. So, a lot of times, you go through things, and it's really for your benefit and for you to get better. And I feel like this is a time for me to really dive in and study football, really dive in and get into my studies and really, develop players. I really want to be one of the gurus of guys who help athletes, not just on the athletic plane, but also in a holistic way, help develop their mind, their mindset, be able to help sports elevate them to the next level. It's not so much about going to the NFL, but really, or the NBA or whatever, but really letting that sport pay for their college and being able to do whatever they want to do on the next level. So, that's what we're working on now.
That's great. LaVon, people may not know, but your cousin is Devon Stills of the Bengals. The story, of he and his daughter, Leah, has touched so many lives over the last year. Have you talked to Devon lately?
I haven't talked to him. Really, I didn't know he was my cousin until, he got drafted. And so for him to be going through what he's going through now, and I've been through that whole situation, and we haven't really touched bases or anything like that. I know he has a lot going on, and when you're going through that, it's serious business. I can imagine it being his daughter. I mean, I have a little girl myself, and I can imagine that it's just, devastating, to go through this, and it takes you through a lot of emotions. You wonder why you or why her, and a lot of times, cancer is kind of unexplainable. I mean, it hits everybody. It's affecting everybody, and, we really have to do something to do something about it, but, I really feel for him. I do. I hope that that he knows that he's in my prayers. I don't really know how close of cousins that we are, but if he claims me as a cousin, that's great. I mean, that's fine. But I pray for him and his daughter all the time. And I really just hope for healing. I hope that she does heal and that he gets to see her grow up. And I mean, that's what every parent wants, to be able to see their kids grow up and maybe someday be able to take care of them. But I really feel for him. I wish him the best.
Bob, questions for LaVon?
Yeah, LaVon, just want to get back to your coaching. One coaching question before I move on. I mean, you were such a great player in the NFL, and to coach at a college level, and probably at a place where, 95-99% of the guys will never see the NFL, LaVon, did you ever find it difficult to kind of scale it down and knowing that these guys had to be taught fundamentals and, they weren't ever going to be as good as you? How did you handle that whole thing? It's like I always think of Ted Williams managing when he did, how tough it was for him. Did you ever get that feeling?
I didn't, and the good thing was I coached high school ball before that. I coached high school ball for about 5 years, and also I was a head coach at a Christian school, and they never had football before. And so we had to coach those guys on just how to run. I mean, to make sure they use their arms and running. I had to drive the bus. I mean, you had to do everything as a high school head coach. And that really carried over to the next level that I got to. I understand that every athlete is not going to be a LaVon Kirkland or somebody on that level. So you go down to that level. And you really try to, and I always try to emphasize things like, effort, how to approach the game of football as far as, what kind of character you want to have. Helping those guys understand that it is a work, and it's not about the talent, but, you know, really really fine-tuning the fundamentals of the game, understanding how to play the game, you know, when something happened, especially with the linebackers, you know, always try to talk big picture, you know, when this happens, what's going on around you. So you really, I think at that level, you can really teach the game. You just got to get everybody to buy into what you're doing. And a lot of times they're a little skeptical at first, but as it went along, you know, those guys really bought into what we were trying to tell them. And I think the one thing is a lot of times, you know, teams always talk about that winning that game. And I always try to go to the approach that, you know, winning is a process, and that you have to do the right things. You have to be self-disciplined to be able to succeed. And, you know, I think in a lot of areas we did a good job of that, but there were probably some things that we could have probably done a lot better. But, you know, I'm glad I got the opportunity to coach. And, you know, you don't really worry about, oh, these guys are not good. I really think every good coach tries to develop the talent that he has and try to get the best out of that talent. And if he can do that, then you're coaching. I mean, you're not going to always have the best players, but can you use what that guy has? Can you figure out what he can do to help the team out? And sometimes it's not about your scheme. You know, it's about, you know, putting them in the right place. And sometimes you may have to play a handful of defenses, but if they know it and they can move fast, that's the whole point. You know, when I was at Pittsburgh, it was about the athletes, what we can do, and, you know, if there was something that we couldn't do, Don Capers, Dick LeBeau, Coach Carr had the good sense of saying, hey, let's not do that. So that's what we try to do on that level, too. We try to make sure that we can break it down. What can we do well as a team? What the guys can do? And just try to move forward from that. So it wasn't really frustrating at all, because I came from a place where, you know, these guys had never played football before, and we actually got them to play football. So that was a big accomplishment at that level. So when I was at FAM, I mean, we just used what we got. We had some pretty good athletes, you know. Maybe some of them thought that they were going to play pro, but, I mean, what college kid doesn't think when they come in that they have a shot to play in the NFL?
That's true. As far as your career in the NFL, LeVon, I think the best compliment any athlete could ever be given is a guy that was ready to play every week, showed up every week, and brought it every week. And that's what you did. You basically, an 11-year career, you never really missed a game. And that has to be, there has to be something genetic there. It has to be something about mental toughness. What do you attribute your solid makeup to as far as your Iron Man mentality?
You know, honestly, you know, my father and my mother, a lot of people may not believe this, but they were sharecroppers, you know, back in the day. And, you know, they really, you know, both of them didn't finish high school or anything like that, but they were really solid people as far as work ethic was concerned. And they really kind of gave us that work ethic. They really showed us how to work and you know, show up every day and be consistent. And basically that's what my parents were. They were just hardworking, consistent parents. You know, they were there for us all the time. They worked hard and made sure that we were fed. They made sure that we were clothed. They made sure that we went to school. They made sure that we were consistent. The process in our family was, you know, my father would sit you down around, you know, and this is really kind of, you know, big picture thinking, you know, when we're in 10th grade, he, you know, sat us down and he basically said, okay, what are you going to do? And he said, okay, well, let me tell you what's going to happen. After you graduate from high school, and you will graduate from high school, when September comes, you know, the good news is that you're grown. The bad news is that you're grown. So you better have a plan. And so, you know, and that time, that was really great advice, you know, really, you know, before it's time advice back in those days. So we all had to have a plan about what we're going to do in our lives. And, you know, for me, it was easy. You know, when I was 11 years old, man, my whole thinking was I was going to play in the NFL. And I knew exactly what I wanted. I think a lot of times if you're going to get what you want, you got to know what you want. And you got to be able to pay the price for that. And it's self-discipline. And, you know, that's what I did. I mean, you know, every day, you know, even though I was a bigger linebacker, I was always in great shape, you know. Was one of the guys who worked out twice a day during the off season. So I was always in great shape, always battle-tested, ready to play. And I think, you know, the cool thing about my career is, you know, that the guys that I play with, I played against, you know, it's always ultimate respect. I mean, and I'm like always kind of shocked, but in a way not shocked because I knew every day I brought it. You know, I knew every day that if you played against me, that you're going to get a full taste of me. I was very intense, but I, you know, I wasn't a guy who jumped around or anything like that. It's just really about the business. If you look at my background, you know, that's what it was. You know, my parents were very hard workers, very consistent. Did it every day. They grind before the word, you know, before everybody starts saying the word grind. They did it. I mean, and it came from a situation where, you know, you're in the South, you're African American, you don't have an education, you're going through the back door. And for them to be able to raise eight of us and for us to all go to schools, you know, multiple siblings having master's degrees, man, doing well, you know, really it's a testimony of what they did, you know, how as a person you could, you know, you can do whatever you need to do if you really know exactly what you want. I knew exactly what I wanted, and that was to play pro ball at a very high level. That's what I did. And, you know, even with the coaching thing, that's going to work out to my benefit. That's going to propel me in this game. And you wait and see. I mean, you're going to see me develop a lot of athletes. You're going to see me coach a lot of athletes to greatness.
Amen.
That's great stuff, LeVon. You know, switch gears just a little bit, LeVon. I need your help to make me feel better about our Steelers. Okay. They made a couple of big coaching changes on the defensive side. First, really, talk about how do you feel about how things ended for Dick LeBeau?
You know, I would tell anybody that I'm a LeBeau soldier. You know, I played against him. I think that during his time, he's a very innovative coach. You know, with the 3-4 scheme and the blitz zone, that comes from, you know, his imagination. You know, I give Don Capers a lot of credit too, but you know, he was the guy that players wanted to play for. And he related to players no matter who we were. And I think with anything, you always want to develop relationships. And I think that he developed relationships where players would do whatever they could for him. Now, as far as the situation, as far as him leaving Pittsburgh, you know, it's sad, but, you know, things change. I don't think anything was ever wrong with his philosophy. You know, I just don't think he might have. I don't think he had the players, and nothing bad about the players that are there. I just think maybe, you know, the pieces wasn't quite there. I think with Pittsburgh, you have to find the pieces. No matter how good a scheme is, you know, it boils down to the players. You know, the guys got to go out there and they got to get it done. Not only do they have to get it done, they have to believe in what they're doing. I totally believed in what we were doing in Pittsburgh when LeBeau was there. Whatever he called, I felt like he was going to work. And that's a part of it, too. But this guy's been tremendous for the game, Hall of Famer in coaching, a great player, an innovator of the game. And, you know, you hate to see anybody like that get let go. But, you know, maybe, you know, they thought it was a time for a change and they made the change. And but I think more so than getting rid of Dick LeBeau, man, you better put some players out there. Because I think that, I mean, you think about it in the linebacker scheme of things. I mean, can you name a linebacker with the Pittsburgh Steelers? That's never been the case.
I could. I don't know if everybody could.
But at one point you're always familiar about the steel linebackers because it's been such a lineage for such a long time. I mean, you know the linebackers.
Right.
I'm not saying they're not any good, but I mean, you know, like Lloyd.
I don't know. Are they?
I mean, Lambert. I mean, geez. I mean, you go down the line, and I think if you don't have a great set of linebackers, you don't have a good defense.
Right. So that's my question. Based on what you've seen, do they have good linebackers? Because to your point, if they're not, you know, we're not getting any pressure on the quarterbacks, the sacks are down, and in a 3-4, you got to generate, you know, pressure on the quarterback from the linebacker position, and I haven't seen any.
Well, even when we went into the scheme with FAMU, I always thought that those four linebackers all play a part. And you're right with the outside linebackers. Both of those guys at the outside. And if you look at the Pittsburgh's history, especially when they went to the 3-4, when they were really good, they had two great rushers from the outside that just caused havoc. Now the offense can't really, you know, slide to one side or the other. Then, you know, the inside linebackers,
right,
which I thought, you know, when we played, probably didn't get as much credit as the outside guys, but those inside linebackers have to be, I mean, super solid. I mean, they have to be able to not only play against the run, but be effective in the pass, also be good blitzers, be able to take on, you know, linemen. Those guys have to be solid. That nose and those two linebackers, man, they have to be on point. You know, I'm not saying that they're not good players, but I don't think they get the rush that they need. And that rush and that 3-4,
right,
that pass rusher scheme is vital, it's crucial. And you got to have two guys who can get after the quarterback. And I haven't seen that. You know, I'm not saying that Worrells and those guys are not good players. I mean, they just haven't been generating a whole lot of pass rush. And then, like I said before, man, those inside guys, they gotta be versatile. And, you know, you gotta have one that's a guy who can plug, and a guy, you know, even that guy, you know, I played a buck linebacker, and, you know, a lot of people looked at me as a run stopper, but, man, you don't know how many times I had to carry the tight ends up the seams, you know. And that other linebacker, the Will linebacker or the Mac linebacker, has to be able to create some havoc in the middle, has to be able to be versatile, has to be more of a cleanup man. You know, he has to be able to make tackles because that defense, a lot of times, that Mac linebacker will make a lot of tackles. So that guy's got to be able to make the tackles, fight off blockers. So that scheme calls for guys who can really play linebackers. If you got a guy who's not quite as good, it does affect it, especially with the two outside linebackers.
Levon, a couple
you guys
more
tell
and
me, am I right, or you guys let me know?
I think you're 100% right. I'm frustrated as all, you know, as I can possibly be by what I've seen or lack of what I've seen from, you know, the Steelers defense, particularly at the linebacker position. I hope Shazier turns into be, you know, everything that the Steelers thought he was going to be, because he's got a lot of speed. He spent most of last season injured. And Timmons seems to be a guy that makes, you know, over 100 tackles a year. So if there's one of the four guys that I think, you know, is a great player, I think that's Timmons. I haven't seen anything from the outside linebackers, and that's, you know, like I say, you know, when you think about the great Steelers linebackers, particularly the other three guys that you played with Greg Lloyd and Kevin Green, who may, you know, be two of the greatest outside linebackers in the history of the game. But, you know, those guys were making, you know, giving, you know, quarterbacks fits and left tackles and right tackles fits, because they were always in on the quarterback, you know, giving him little time and fleshing him out.
Yeah.
And you guys, you and Chad Brown,
Right.
We're awesome inside guys.
Right. And you know, the funny part was that we were outside linebackers coming in. So we really never played the inside backer until we got there. And, you know, it was just a learning curve. We had to really kind of learn the position. You know, it's a lot of repetition, But, you know, you got to have – I think you really got to have athletes on that inside. And, you know, the outside too. And, you know, how the game is doing, man, you may need to get guys that play safety, put them in outside linebackers. You got to get speed out there. You got to get guys who can cover those flats, but also put pressure on that, you know, put pressure on that that edge and be able to hold that edge. And I think you got to get you got to get good athletes on the inside. You got to have guys who can cover. You got to have guys who can really be able to go downhill. Guys who can move laterally to stop the running game. But you know, we always talk about. You know, talking about myself, Kevin Green, Greg Lloyd, Chad Brown. But I'm going to tell you, I think a guy that's kind of left out was Jason Gilden. To me, Jason Gilden was probably the most versatile outside backer we had. I mean, this guy could stop and run. This guy could rush the pass. And he did it pretty quietly, but nobody ever gives him the credit that he really deserves. And that guy, I mean, as far as pass rushing, never made mistakes. I mean, he was a very solid player for the Steelers for a long time.
He's number one on the Steelers all-time sack list, right? Because they didn't used to keep that sack or that stat back in the 70s. But I think Jason Gill is the all-time sack leader in Steelers history.
Oh, yeah, man.
Bob, question for LeVon before we let him run?
Yeah, well, last one, LeVon. I mean, you're the perfect guy to ask since you're so appreciative of good coaching. And as a rookie, when you came in the league, you walk into training camp and you're surrounded by guys like Bill Cowher, Dom Capers, even Marvin Lewis, and we already mentioned LeBeau. Could you even ask for more legendary coaches to start a career off with?
You really couldn't. I mean, and the cool thing was when I came in, they kind of treated you like a – I mean, Coach Capers and Coach LeBeau were great at the way they treated you, you know. Getting the job done, making sure that you understood what was going on. But they, you know, they asked you in a way that you were appreciative of. I mean, you know, in the college culture at the time, you come in and everybody is cursing you out. I mean, with everything. But you kind of appreciate the professionalism that you have. And you know, people being instructors, you know, knowing what they're talking about, but also could talk to you in a way where, you know, hey, in NFL, it's about getting the job done, and I like that. And, you know, even though, like, me and Marvin Lewis at first, man, I was just like, he's driving me crazy. But what he did was he helped me to be really consistent at what I did. I mean, you know, with him, I end up, you know, staying after practice, just working on my steps, my first steps, you know, because he would get on me about false steps. Even when I made a play in the backfield, he would get on me about my technique. So it's kind of funny how it kind of comes back around, because I'm really particular about guys and, you know, the way they start, the way, you know, the angles that they take, you know, I think those things really do make a difference. And if you can teach players that, then you're doing something. And I really felt like going into my rookie year, and I think that's why I developed so fast, that, you know, I was out of position. I played outside in college. And for those guys to have enough trust in me to draft me in the second round and put me in a position that I never played, really told you the confidence that they had in me. And, you know, I just always wanted to return that confidence to those guys. And, you know, we had a great coaching staff. I mean, it really did. And, you know, Coach Kyle was a defensive guy. And Coach was a great motivator. I mean, he was a guy that, even though you're in the league, he had you excited about playing on Sundays. And you could tell it was genuine coming from him, the excitement that he had when you actually made a play. He did something good. He was the first one to congratulate you. And I think that comes from him having a background as a player. So it was cool to see a professional coach, really, especially a head coach, excited about the game and showing his emotions. It's cool. It's not for everybody, but I think for a guy just coming in, man, it's great. So, you know, as I looked upon it, you know, I was in a blessed situation. But I knew I was going to be in a blessed situation when they drafted me. So I was really excited about going to Pittsburgh. And can I tell you a quick story before you guys let me go about my draft day?
Sure.
Going to Pittsburgh?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, I talked to those guys, you know, those Pittsburgh was really the team that showed probably the most interest in me. I had a few other teams, but they really showed a lot of interest. And, you know, I went to visit Pittsburgh and, you know, Coach Carr talked to me. And I decided right then, man, I wanted to play for that team. So we go to, you know, it's draft day. It's a little different back then, the coverages, and, you know, unlike it is right now. And I was at my sister's home, and I remember thinking, you know, I may not go in the first round. So I was okay with that, you know. And the Steelers picked me on Cersei, even though I tell Cersei that I should have been picked before him. you know, and, you know, a lot of times we talked about, you know, putting it out there in the atmosphere, you know, saying what you want. And so I remember those guys going up for the 38th pick. And I went in the bathroom, man, and this is no lie. This is a true story. I looked in the mirror, and I said, they're going to pick me. They're going to pick me. They're going to pick me. I walked out of the bathroom. I was so confident that they were going to pick me, I sat by the phone. Sure enough, the phone rings, right? And it's Tom Donahoe. You know, I guess if you're a second rounder, you don't really get the president or the head coach. You get Tom Donahoe. So I get Tom Donahoe, which I love dearly. And he basically tells me that, hey, LeVon, you know, we got the next pickup and we're really considering picking you. I'm like, ooh, considering. And then Charles Bailey, the guy who I think really scouted me the most, he came up and he said, hey, man. He said, hey, y'all got a TV in Lamar? I'm like, yeah, of course we got TVs in Lamar. He said, y'all got cable? I'm like, yeah, we got cable. So he said, okay, well, your name, he said, welcome to the black and gold. Your name should be coming on the ticket. But at that time, I was the very last pick that day, that Sunday, going to the second round, the very last pick. And they were going off the air. ESPN was going off the air. And they didn't show any of my highlights, but they did mention that I was getting drafted in the second round. And, man, you know, that was a thrill for me. I mean, I actually willed myself to get picked by the Pittsburgh Steelers. And, really, that's the first time I ever told that story.
Wow.
So you guys
had
it first.
Great stuff. Thank you for sharing that with us.
No problem.
LeVon, speaking of great, you're great. I can't thank you. We can't thank you enough for, you know, for being generous with your time tonight and being a part of the show, being our very first guest on this show. You talk about someone who took a chance on two Jumokes out of nowhere. You joined us 3.5 years ago, and here you are back with us, you know, for a fourth time tonight. You are fantastic. You know, I could sit and talk to you about Steeler football all night long. I hope you'll come back again real soon. And
whenever you guys need me.
Because, like I said.
Whenever you guys need
LeVon,
me,
thank you
I'll
so
be
much.
There.
We appreciate you very
you
much,
guys.
LeVon. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All the best to you and your family. Hopefully we get to catch up soon.
All right. Sounds LeVon. Good. Thank you very much.
All right.
All
take
right.
care. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks, LeVon. Wow. First time you shared a story, and it's on our show. That's fantastic, Bob.
He's a cool guy, Chris. Man, you know, he's such so well-spoken for a guy who was so fierce on the football field, but all business. And, like I said, you talk about an Iron Man. Just check out his stats. And he was one of those guys, Chris, that probably took a back seat because he played with such great guys. But we know how good he was, and he's just as good as guy off the field as he was on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things, and, you know, like I say, he's been on a few times in the past, LeVon's a heck of a funny guy. You know, even the little dry line like, ooh, they're considering me? Really? Considering? You know. I love LeVon. He is such a great guy, and hopefully we get to have him back on the show real soon. All right, we've got our next guest, John Bach, hanging on the line. We're going to get to John right on the other side of this word from our friends over at Kaivin Foods, and Coastal Orthopedics.
This is Reggie Kelly, former Cincinnati Bengals and Atlanta Falcon tight end, and I'm the owner of Kyven Foods. And if you enjoy delicious food, you're going to love my Kyven products, which consists of our honey apple salsa, sweet barbecue sauce, and an array of seasonings. For store locations, online orders, and recipes, check out our website at www.kyven82.com. That's KYVAN82.com. One taste, and you'll appreciate the goodness.
Are you suffering from chronic pain in your shoulders, hips, knees, or wrists? Tired of living life with an old injury that just won't go away? If you answered yes to either of these questions, we can help. At Coastal Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, Dr. Candelora and his fine staff of medical professionals will get you back on the road to recovery. Their state-of-the-art facility and attention to detail will ensure you will be enjoying life again and feeling invincible in no time. Since 1991, Dr. Candelora and Coastal Orthopedics have been specializing in joint replacement, arthritis, and osteoporosis care, as well as pediatric and adult general orthopedics. Visit us on the web, www.bone-dr.com, or call our Newport Richey office just north of Tampa at 727-848-1417. Proud sponsors of Mike Ditka's The Gridiron Greats Assistance Fund.
Hey, hey, welcome back. This is Todd Washington, two-time Super Bowl champ, offensive line coach for the Baltimore Ravens, and you are listening to Thursday Night Tailgate with my boys Chris Moscato and Bob Lazzari on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Go get them, guys.
Before we get to our next guest, John Bach, I want to give a quick shout-out to our good friend Renee Show at Integrated Play. If you're either already in job transition or you just want to be in job transition, go to integratedplay.org online and see what Renee can do to help you. We all want to do business and take advice from someone that we trust and who has our best interests at heart. Well, I'm telling you, you're not going to find someone who fits that description any better than Renee Show at Integrated Play. She's smart, she's talented, and the kind of person that you want to have working with you and actually having work for you. She's doing great things, above and beyond things, for some of our guests who are in transition from being pro athletes and are now going into the job market. I'm telling you, folks, she is absolutely the best. There just isn't another way to describe Renee. If you work with her for 2 minutes, you're going to understand why we say that every single week on this show. If you're an athlete or anybody in the job market, do yourself a favor and reach out to Renee. You're going to be very glad you did. Go to integratedplay.org online and give her a follow on Twitter, at Integrated Play. All right, now back with us on the Kyven Foods guest line is our good friend and former Dolphins and Jets guard and last season's head coach of the Brooklyn Bolts and the FXFL, Mr. John Bach. John, how you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing very well. How are you all?
Good, John.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you.
Hey, was that LeVon Kirkland you all had on?
That's exactly right.
Hey, was that LeVon Kirkland you had on? Well, hey,
right.
LeVon,
yeah,
now.
It was LeVon.
Hey, just do me a favor. Let him know this. If I ever decide to sue about head injury, I'm naming him in the lawsuit.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. That guy, I still remember running power against him, and I'm running around, and I destroyed everybody the entire season. I run around that corner and hit him, and I felt like I got knocked out right there. So you talk about a man who was extremely powerful.
Yeah.
He's a big man. What a heck of an athlete he was, too.
Great player.
So,
great player.
John, you had 9 guys from your Brooklyn Bolts team go on to the NFL last season. And to really understand just how amazing that number is, you only had 36 guys on your roster. So 25% of your guys moved up to play in the NFL, which to me, John, speaks directly to your ability as a head coach and your coaching staff and what a great job you guys did preparing those guys to play at the next level. I know y'all went 4-0 last season, but is getting those guys into the NFL the most satisfying achievement you had?
Well, that was always a point when I went there. And one of the things that I did was I rotated my quarterbacks every series or every 2 series. And people said, well, do you have to do this? And, you know, we were playing against Tosh Boyd and some other guys. I'm like, this is what this league is about. You know, currently in the NFL, you're only allowed 14 hitting practices in 17 weeks. Yet you have 10 guys on the practice squad. What are they doing? I mean, they're not hitting. They're not
right.
getting better. I mean, when I played for Jimmy Johnson, we hit 3 days a week. You know, you hear stories about the Cleveland Browns, you know, in the early 2000s, and they went 30 straight days of two-a-days. I think the FXFL gives these kids a chance to get better and get fundamentally better.
But to the point you just made, John, with only 14 padded practices during the season, how do guys, you know, on the practice squad, to your you know, rhetorical question, you know, what are these guys doing? How do those guys stay in game shape? It just doesn't make any sense to me why you've got those guys when they're not hitting, they're not padded up, they're not, you know, I mean, these guys aren't ready to step in.
No, they're in meetings. They're sitting in meetings.
A guy go down.
They're sitting in meetings.
Yeah.
That's all they're doing. And they're working out, lifting weights. And, you know, I was fortunate enough where my entire staff were all ex-NFL players. I mean, I had Joey Smith, who played, you know, 5, 6, 7 years with the Giants as my defensive coordinator. I had Marvin Jones, the last defensive player to be a finalist for the Heisman, as my linebacker coach. And I had a guy named Kelvin Kinney, who played with the Redskins. So those three guys on defense were absolutely amazing. And you talk about them being able to walk the walk and talk the talk. And these kids would sit there and listen to them saying, look, you can't act like this. You can't do this. You can't do that. This is the way you have to do it. And those players knew, man, look, I grew up watching those guys, you know, and they bought into what we were teaching, and the players did an amazing job.
John, two of your defensive backs, Kevin Fogg and Jordan Dangerfield, got signed by the Steelers. Goodness knows, you know, the Steelers need defensive back help. Talk about what you saw from those guys and what Steeler fans might see out of them next season.
Well, I believe Dangerfield might have been let go, which was kind of hard. So we started Dangerfield over Fogg. And then I went to my defensive coordinator, my special teams coach, and I said, look, we got to find a way to get Fogg on the field. I mean, he's got legit speed. So the next game, we wound up putting him in against Boston, and he hits an 80-yard punt return for a touchdown, has two interceptions. So, I mean, Kevin Fogg was a guy that didn't really stand out in training camp, but you knew he had talent. And then when we finally figured out what to do with him, he wound up being a great player, and he's going to be a great player for the Steelers. I mean, he has legit speed. I mean, he is a 4.3, 4.29 guy. He can flat out fly when he gets in space. So I think the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to really, really like him, you know, as a punt returner. And if they keep Dangerfield, I think they're going to see a safety that will come up and play 8 in the box and be able to hit you in the run. I mean, Dangerfield was a really good physical safety.
John, one of your defensive linemen, LeKendrick Ross, went on to play with the Redskins. You shared a very interesting story with me about him and making your team. Do you mind sharing that story with us tonight?
Not at all, and I don't think LeKendrick would either. You know, and it doesn't. You know, LeKendrick is a 20-year-old, 6'5", 350-pound defensive tackle that was cut by the Bengals last year. So he had some maturity issues. He's had some home issues, some life issues. And basically, the kid has nobody, you know. And, you know, he's got friends and family, but nobody locally here in South Florida, which is where he was from. So, you know, I made final cuts. I let everybody on the team know that they made the roster, and now we get a move. I mean, I held training camp on my own golf course where I live. So, I mean, Spurrier hasn't even done that. So, I literally took my golf cart to work every day. So it's Heron Bay TPC. It was built for the Honda Classic. It's where we play the Honda Classic. Now we moved to 10 miles up the street to Mirasol. So I told these kids, I go, don't fool around here. I go, this is, we are a little 17,000 person community off Coral Springs. Yet we have more cops than you can possibly imagine. Don't fool around here. So sure enough, you give the guys 48 hours off to get packed up to go to New York. Someone's going to get in some trouble. And these police officers called me that were friends of mine. And they said, look, you know, we got 3-year players out here on the golf course being mischievous, this, 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 this. So, I you know, sure enough, I got the police calling me. Thank God they're friends of mine, and there's no criminal trespass or anything else. So it's just kids out having fun. You know, they made a professional roster. They were probably excited. So I wasn't that angry about it. But, you know, when I went to the hotel, I took my golf cart, went to the hotel, I met with everybody. And I didn't like the attitude I was getting from the three players. They were trying to make it seem like it was everybody else's fault. And I'm like, no, it's your fault. You know, you put yourself in this situation. So I finally said, you know what? I go, show up at the airport tomorrow and I'll make a decision if you're going to come with us to New York or not. Otherwise, I got 10 other guys. I already replaced my starting tight end and brought in A.C. Leonard, who's the fastest tight end at the combine since 08. You know, I already cut people and brought people in, so everybody knew that I would do that. So I brought him in there, and here's this giant of a man comes up to me. And he's like, Coach, I got nowhere to go. He goes, I have no home. I have nowhere to go. And I said, well, you should have thought about that last night where you're riding around in your golf cart acting like a jerk. I go, this is a business. I go, you know, you're not in college anymore. I go, I'm paying you to do something. I'm going to take you to New York. What's going to happen if you do the same thing in New York where I don't know the cop and you wind up getting arrested? He goes, Coach, I promise you'll never do it again. So I went over and I met with Calvin Kinney. Now, we call Calvin Kinney Coach Debo. He is the biggest defensive line coach you've ever seen in your life. He's 15 years as a pro, 6'7", you know, 325 pounds and lean. And I said, can you control this kid? I go, can you get this kid in line? He goes, Coach, he goes, you give him a second chance. I'll make sure he lives up to it, or I'll be the guy that fires him myself. I said, okay. So you had this ex-NFL mentor from the same kind of background that this young man had be able to just sit there, and he dogged him some day. He just worked the heck out of him and everything else. And Marvin Lewis from the Bengals is calling this kid during meetings, everything else, checking on him. So there were a lot of people checking on him just to make sure that he was doing okay. You know, he's a good-hearted young man. And the fact that, you know, I think Calvin Kinney changed his life. You know, I'd like to say I had some part of it, but Calvin was the guy that was there every day. And then he winds up signing with, you know, one of my college friends, you know, Jay Gruden at the Redskins. So just a story of a young man who was immature, got with an experienced NFL player, and that experienced NFL player taught him some life lessons, and it seems like it stuck. So I think it's a great story.
It is a great story. You're 100% right. So hopefully he does well with the Redskins and moves forward in his career. Look forward to tracking him. We're going to have him on the show.
He's a monster.
In April.
Oh, 6'5",
yeah.
3'5".
From the size, it sounds like he's.
I mean, we had him. He was 375, and Coach Kinney would make him run every day after practice, even when everybody else was in the bus and left. It'd be him and Coach Kinney out there working out, doing more than everybody else was doing to get his weight down from 370 to 350. Now, if he can get his weight down to 337, 340, he is going to be a force. He is going to be a force. He's a young man. He's only 20. I think he just turned 21. So here's a kid with nothing but upside, and he's got that kind of ability and strength.
Right. Yeah, great story. Bob, questions for John?
And, John, keeping on that subject of workouts, you know, we're 3 weeks after the Super Bowl now, and, you know, guys go right back to work with the weights and their amazing training methods now. You've been out of the game, Mike, about 15 years. John, I was just wondering if there was anything you could change about your off-season workouts back in the day. What would it be, and what was a typical day like in the off-season of John Bach back in the late 90s?
The funniest thing I remember is, you know, I came to Miami in 96, and I didn't start any games in 96, but I played every game that I was here. But, you know, I really wasn't, you know, I wasn't a draft choice. Jimmy and them really didn't know me that well. And, you know, I always went to work out. Day after season was over, I was back in the weight room. I mean, that was the kind of person that I was. And I still remember Jimmy Johnson walking to the weight room, and I'm the only guy in the building. And he goes, "Hey, you, how are you?" I'm like, "Oh, God. Nobody even knows my goddamn name around this place, so I'm going to get fired sooner or later." So, you know, I was the person who outworked everybody. You know, I didn't run with offensive linemen. I ran with linebackers. You know, I didn't work out. You know, it was me and Daryl Gardner who worked out together. If you're familiar with Daryl Gardner, I mean, that man's a 320-pound bodybuilder right now. So it was me. It was Daryl Gardner and I worked out every day and pushed each other. And then when we went out and ran, I didn't run with the linemen. I ran either with the tight ends or the linebackers. I almost got arrested in college. You know, they gave me the key to the weight room. I worked nights. And then one night I was off, so I decided to get a workout in. And I'm in the weight room. You know, I let myself in. I'm in a pair of shorts. I'm doing laundry. And, you know, we have the laundry bins and everything going with the laundry machines. I'm doing laundry in my underwear and a pair of shorts working out. And the cops come in with guns and throw me up against the wall. I'm like,
wow.
I have a right to be here.
So we're doing laundry?
Doing laundry and music loud and working out at a gym where, you know, it was 3 a.m. But I worked nights anyway, so I had to get my workout in, so I would go. But even when I got fired my rookie year, I would sit there and I worked the trucking docks for Yellow Freight. So I would sit on a forklift and load trucks all night from 11 to 8 o'clock, 8:30 I think it was, 8:30 in the morning I'd get off. So then at 8:30 I would go over to the University of Louisville and I'd work out till noon. And then I would get home at, you know, 12:30, eat lunch, go to bed at 1. Then I would get up at 5:30 or 5 o'clock and then pick my daughter up from daycare because my wife was working. And then my wife would get home, and I'd go back to bed, and I'd get back up at 10:30 and do it all over again. And I did that all winter long in Louisville where it was 20 below zero. It was miserable. So, yeah, if you want to make it, you know, you've got to be either you have to be very, very talented or you have to be willing to outwork everybody. And if you're not willing, if you're not the most talented guy in the world and you don't want to outwork everybody, then go do something else. It's not for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've meant to ask you this on other shows. We could probably ask you this on every show we do from now on, John, about, especially up here in New England, many, many stories about hazing, especially in the high school footballs. And, you know, you as a coach, you as a player, you're familiar with the incognito situation. You're a great guy to ask. Just want to get your thoughts about hazing in general. It's a different society than it was maybe in the 80s and 90s when we were younger, John, the rite of passage, et cetera, toughness. What's your entire take on this whole thing right now?
Well, you know, I think it's a point that I think we get too sensitive about things. And I think people got to understand some things are a rite of passage. You know, for my hazing, Ted Washington grabbed me in my shorts, put me in a cradle, and then I got taped from head to toe so I couldn't move. Then they took me outside and put me on the goalpost. So, I mean, we were hazed badly at Louisville. But it was nothing. It was done. It was there. It was done. It was over. It wasn't malicious. Now, when hazing gets malicious, which happens in every frat house in America, in every sorority in America, the same kind of atrocities go on, but they're not talked about as much. So I, you know, it is what it is. I think you got to do it in good nature. As long as nobody gets hurt or you don't do anything sexual, you know, a little hazing's fine. I mean, we got hazed in the NFL. We'd have to sit there and go get donuts and breakfast sandwiches for everybody every morning, which means we had to get up at 5:30 because we had to work out at 6:30 and be at the donut shop buying sandwiches for 15 guys every day. Or you're trying to get on the plane and someone's going to buy 200 wings. So I just think it's how you go about it. You know, can you do what we did in the past? No. Do some people take it too far? Yes. But are some people too sensitive about it? Probably so. You know, nobody had a problem with incognito other than Jamie Martin. So everyone wants to make incognito seem like he was this big racist and everything about what he said. But if you talk to the guys who were in the locker room, no one's got a problem with him. Now, did he use bad language, bad terminology? Did he use bad judgment in what he said? Of course he did. You can't stand up for that. But that coaching staff, from what I heard, asked him to haze Jamie Martin, and he took it too far. And he said things he shouldn't have done. He acted like an idiot versus being a pro. And so that conversation is very, very difficult. You know, I guess it always depends on who you ask about the situation that happened. You know, you can always ask one group and they'll say it's okay, and you ask another group and they'll say it's okay or it's not okay. And then people in the middle will just listen to whoever talks loudest and then respond. But if you've ever been in that atmosphere, you know, those are, I mean, an NFL locker room is a very, very difficult workplace. I mean, don't think it's not.
So, John, do you think he can be successful now that, you know, with a new team up in Buffalo? Can he get the trust of the other guys on that team?
Yeah, I don't think players don't have an issue with him. They all knew what happened. You know, everyone knew what went down, and maybe you agree with them or maybe you don't agree with them, but he was trying to be the leader of the Dolphins, and from what I've understood, the Dolphins asked him to be a jerk, and he went too far with it. So I think that's kind of how the whole NFL perceives it. I think it was somebody asked him to do something, and he didn't know how to do it, and he did it the wrong way and got busted. And now everyone's getting punished for it.
Yeah. He delivered the code red.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great way to put it, especially from being from Miami. He was cute so close. he got ordered to give the code red. He gave the code red, and all of a sudden now he's on trial for his life because no one wants to own up that they told him to do it. And I don't think one member of the Dolphins organization stood up and said, yeah, we told him to lean on him a little bit. We didn't mean that. I mean, I never even heard that statement come out of Miami.
Right.
I mean, you tell a player to do something.
Before we let you go, John, tell our listeners how they can follow you. You're such a passionate interview. Tell them how they can follow you over social media.
Well, just John Bach at Facebook. That's pretty much all I do, or the FXFL posts on Facebook as well. And then March 13th and 14th, we're going to hold open tryouts for the FXFL at Florida International University. And you can go to fxfl.com and register for the tryout.
Awesome. John, thanks for being a part of the show again tonight. It's always such a pleasure to have you with us. Hopefully you'll be back again with us next month and give us an update on how that's going, because we're big supporters of the XFL. We think that's the way the NFL should be going. To the earlier point, get away from practice squads. Let's get guys that are game ready, and you guys did such a great job with that. But all the best to you and your family. We look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Hey, all the best, guys, have a great month. I said all the best and have a great month. Sorry, my voice is bad. I've been in Chicago for the last week, and it's been 30 below. So my voice is shot. I'm back in Florida. It's 80 degrees, and we're playing basketball outside tonight.
There you go. All right, John. We'll take care, and we'll catch up soon.
All right.
Take care, John.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Great stuff, as always, Bob, from John Bach. Doesn't get better than that guy.
You said he's passionate, and we've had a few guests like that tonight, Chris, and you can't fault anyone who brings passion like they did on the football field, and they bring it to the show, and we just love guys like Bach, and very candid, and we can't ask for more than that.
No, you can't. That's exactly right. All right, Bob, it's time for us to put a bow on this one, my friend. Great job, as always, out of you. Let's talk about next week. Who do we got? Well, former Jets and Bucks tight end Anthony Beck, a good friend of ours. Anthony Beck is going to be back with us. Look forward to catching up with him. Our good friend in Bengals, Vikings, and Panthers defensive back, and now new author, Leonard Wheeler, is going to be here. Leonard's got a new book out on the market, so we look forward to hearing all about that from Leonard. One of our sponsors, good friend Dr. Peter Candelora from Coastal Orthopedics. First time he's going to be on the show with us. So we'll talk about, you know, his practice, what stem cell research and procedures that he is doing that is helping athletes heal. He's got some great stuff. Looking forward to having Dr. Candelora on the show. Former Colts and Dolphins fullback Don Nottingham was supposed to be with us tonight, but had to reschedule. So we look forward to having Don with us back again on the show next week. former Jaguars wide receiver and now, unfortunately, former head coach at Alabama State. I hate to see that they let Reggie go. Reggie Barlow is going to be back with us, and the crazy circumstance that they let him go at Alabama State is crazy. He's going to be with us. We'll talk a little bit about that. Plus, obviously, we'll have David Meltzer back with us in our 12th Man segment. So another great show on tap for you next week. We hope you'll be back with us. Want to remind you how you can follow us on Twitter. I am at CT Mascaro. Bob is at Bob_Lazzari. And the show is at TNT Podcast. Plus, also check out our page on Facebook. Give us a like. That's important to us, too. And I want to remind you, you can stay up to date with who our future guests are going to be. And you can stream or download any of our archive episodes from our site for free on ThursdayNightTailgate.com. Bob, take us home, my friend.
It's a great time, Chris, and it's a great lineup. And Dr. Candelora, if I ever go see him, Chris, he'll have his work cut out with me. But someday, we'll see. But our thanks again to our announcer, Joe Lajanusa, for the great job he does with our weekly intro and ads. And to Kyle Turley, Tim Pickett, and all our friends over at Gridiron Records for their partnership and our upcoming outro music. On behalf of myself and Chris Mascaro, we thank everyone out there for listening. We appreciate you the most. Until next week, good night, Kevin. Keep fighting.
Coming down the mountain, I take a breath of sin. Can't tell the day or time, but I know this day will end.